Hi, and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. You know, I love a good choir, whether it's at church or a classical concert. I grew up on church choir, so that's probably where I've been most familiar with it. Emily Edgington Andrews, our guest tonight, is a choral director. Now, that could, by definition, mean she conducts a choir. In reality, it's a whole bunch of choirs that she conducts, and we're going to talk tonight. Our host tonight, Lee Wilkins, is going to talk with Emily about leading choirs, about what community music is all about, and how the community is affected by choral music, how being in a choir can be a part of musical education, especially for young children. That's all ahead. We'll also tell you about the upcoming Unity concert that she'll be a part of. Thinking Out Loud is next on KBIA. Well, hi, and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Back with you after a couple of weeks away. I've been out of town. This is Darren Helwedge, the ordinary host of this show, let's say. But Lee Wilkins is going to be our host this evening, and she's got a terrific conversation with Emily Edgington Andrews. A lot of just good information and good conversation about choirs and about participating in choirs and directing choirs, about what community music is all about. But there's a concert coming up very soon, the Unity concert that they also discussed that you're definitely going to want to know about. Lee Wilkins hosts, Emily Edgington Andrews the guest. It's Thinking Out Loud next on KBIA. Enjoy.
This is Lee Wilkins, your occasional host for Thinking Out Loud. I'm here today with Emily Edgington Andrews, choral director for no fewer than 10 choirs in Columbia, Missouri, who's going to talk to us about community music.
Hello, it's so nice to be here.
Emily, welcome to the program. And the first thing I have to ask you is, you have choirs at all ranges of ability, from, I'm assuming, the most amateur to a professional choir. So talk to us about how you work all of this into a very busy life.
It is a balancing act for sure. And I am fueled by it. So the way my brain works, I can have lots of different things going and constantly be thinking about the next concert, even as I'm conducting one. So that's helpful that I'm sort of fueled by being busy and working with the various age levels. That makes it interesting for me. It helps me stay on my toes because no two rehearsal is the same. So working with younger ones versus more seasoned, well, there are similarities between a middle schooler and an adult. It is different. And so then it helps just keep me fueled, energized.
So talk to us a little bit about how you, if I'm a mom and or a dad and I have a young child who either is completely tone deaf or really sings pretty great, whether that's to the radio or in church or in some other venue, how do I go about getting my youngster involved in the kind of choral activity that you're providing?
Oh, that's a great question. We love working with all ability levels. And some young ones, they do start and they seem to have more of an innate ability. They seem to match pitch easier. But it's all about muscle development. And so some young ones, when they seemingly are, they lack that tonal center, in fact, it might just be that they haven't been working out. You know, the muscles haven't been developed fully yet. And so being part of a choir actually helps that. I would say even more so than studying in a private voice setting, especially when they're young, like that. Singing with others, allowing themselves to sort of be in a little more relaxed musical play setting. So with at least through CAM, Choral Arts Alliance of Missouri, the nonprofit that I am associated with.
Thank you for getting that in there.
Yeah. we start them out in kindergarten, not in a performance-based group, but in a group called Poco Voce, Our Youngest Voices, and it's a music play. So it's kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. They come together and they play games and they use their voice, and it's just kind of the training ground.
And do I just bring, so I'll do mine. So when my grandson comes to visit me, do I just bring him to the rehearsal? Do I have to sign up online, make arrangements? How do we go about that?
Sure. This is a great question. So first, let's back up just a little bit and talk about what CAM is. Choral Arts Alliance of Missouri is a nonprofit organization based here in Columbia, but it's not just for Columbianites. It's anyone in the Mid-Missouri region that can make it to Columbia in time for a rehearsal. So we meet with the various ensembles, and there are 10 right now under CAM's auspices. And we meet once a week, various times during the week. So depending on what age level you're looking at. We have 5 choirs that are based for our youngest voices, and that's kindergarten all the way through high school. And they meet on Sundays. We have an adult community ensemble that's been around for 40 years, Columbia Chorale. It's had a few names along the way.
And it's incredibly well known and very prized in this community.
Yes, yes. And I am super honored to be part of that. From Columbia Chorale, we have a subset called Columbia Chamber Choir. That's an audition group. Columbia Chorale is non-auditioned, and I'll talk about the importance of that in just a little bit. We have a gospel choir for adults and a gospel choir for kids. And then we also have a professional artist in residence called Prometheus, a vocal consort. And that's actually conducted by Paul Crabb here at the University of Missouri and assisted by me. So a lot of different types of ensembles for all the different kinds of voices. And you can find out more about the choirs at choralartsallianceofmissouri.org.
Okay, so let's start with a part that I think is probably scary for everybody. Talk to me a little bit about what's the difference between, oh my goodness, I can no longer do this in the shower, I have to actually audition, versus I just show up.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Right. So for me, I think it's important that everyone realize that if they have a desire to sing, then we have a place for them. So no one is ever turned away for any reason. We don't do choral auditions for many of the groups. There are some ensembles that have an audition component to it, and that's just because there are individuals who really want to continue working at a certain level. And that's what our Columbia Chamber Choir, Cantabella, that's our treble voices, our audition treble voices. And then, of course, Prometheus, those are professional singers, people actually from across the United States that come together once, twice a year to perform. So those are the 3 ensembles that have an audition component to that, but the rest do not. It's the leader's job. It's my job as a conductor or some of the other conductors to help sort of work the voices so that we all are producing the most beautiful sound that we can. I do what's called voice placement hearings or voicings. And that's essentially you stand in a group of anyone who's showing up to that rehearsal as a newbie. And I just listen to you a little bit. I talk to you. I hope to make you feel comfortable. And then I listen to your voice. It's not one-on-one. It's in smaller groups. And that just gives me an idea of where we are. Many of the individuals in our ensembles do have experience, but some do not. Some come and they've never done this before, but they're taking that leap of faith. They want to be part of a community. And that's the essence of what we are. We are a community of individuals of all different races, ages, zip codes, socioeconomic levels. All of those things are so important to making us who we are, and that is CAM.
So you said a couple of things that were of real interest to me, I suspect, like many listeners. So I was involved in choir when I was in school. That's mm-hmm. obviously many years ago. But you also said there are 2 gospel choirs. And I know that for some, in some context, that's prickly, I guess, mm-hmm. if I can use that word, because of the origins of some of that kind of music, the history that
sure.
it involves. So When you say gospel choirs, A, what sort of music are you singing? And B, how does that hold together and maybe fulfill some sort of a larger goal that you have?
Right. So as I continued to grow as a musician, as a conductor, I found that I was really drawn to music that had themes of social justice. So is it going to make us better people? Are we going to create awareness by performing it? Are we going to uplift individuals who may not have that opportunity to use their voice to use their voice? what I found through this is that we help one another be kinder people. We help one another stand up for those who cannot do it by themselves. And music can kind of underscore that ability to move people in a way they might not otherwise be moved. So I say all of this because Unity Concert, our gospel choirs, came about 4 years ago. And it was actually just an idea that myself and a board member, we call it our business meetings, just an excuse to drink wine together. But we were just talking about just various ideas for next season. You know, we always have to be thinking a year in advance. And we discussed how cool would it be if we did a concert that showcased traditional gospel music, you know, performed in the style, the oral style, not notated, taught essentially by rote, versus then Western European tradition. So maybe what we would call concert gospel. Gospel music that is written down. So it comes from the tradition, but it also shares the Western European sort of musical notation and such. And it was really timely because that was the next November, that was 2014, I believe, was when we had some really heated moments here on the campus at the University of Missouri.
We did.
So the idea for this concert, Unity, actually stemmed well before that November 2014. But then 2 months later, we performed our very first Unity concert. So for us, it had nothing to do with any sort of religious connotation. Much of the music that we sing, the patrons were sacred. So we're going to sing sacred music. I don't care what you believe in. But we'll also sing secular as well. This particular concert and those particular ensembles, it's a much different purpose. A unity to, it's honoring the teachings of Martin Luther King Jr., the peaceful teachings, and the idea of how can we work to make our community a better community.
So you said as you were explaining about that there are really two gospel traditions, mm-hmm. one of which is the one that I read the music, mm-hmm. okay, which I think is another barrier for some people
mm-hmm.
who come and say, I don't know how to read music, or I learned to read music 50 years ago and I think maybe I forgot.
Definitely.
Versus the one where it's sort of, I'm going to say, is it called response?
Mm-hmm.
Is
that call and response? Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about the kind of songs, if there are titles that you think people might be familiar with, the call and response versus the more annotated. And then what do I do if I don't know how to read music, or versus if I say I do know how to read music, but I've never performed in something like call and response before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're both interesting skills. And so I have degrees in music and I know how to read music. And for me, when I came to my first gospel choir rehearsal and with Lamont Walker as the conductor, and he is giving me a lyric sheet and all it has is the words, and he's singing to me, here's how the alto line goes. Now sing it back. Now remember it in 20 minutes when we come back again. That was hard for me. I wanted to write down the notes. I wanted to write down solfège is what it's called, you know, for me. Okay, what am I hearing? Whereas my neighbor next to me that I was sitting and I met that day didn't know how to read music, and she was picking up on it so quickly because that's the style that she was more familiar with. Her ears were better in some respects than mine. I think it's just they're both unique challenges, and I don't think anyone should shy away from jumping in and trying. I do have people in Columbia Chorale that come to me and they say, I've always learned by listening. Great. You're not in the wrong place. We'll train you. I mean, we can show you that, you know, the contour, the shape of the line helps you know when your voice needs to move up and move down. But my job as the leader and the job of the other conductors is to help them learn the music. So don't be afraid if you don't have the same musical expertise as someone else. And there are people in our ensembles that have studied music, have careers in music. Maybe they're teachers, maybe they're performers themselves. And we need them as the leaders, but we also need people who just love to sing or just want to be part of a community like this.
So how large are, I mean, I think everybody knows how large Columbia Chorale is, but how large are some of these other groups?
Sure.
Like how many singers do you have on average through the year?
It varies per season, it varies per concert. Our youth choirs can be anywhere from 7 or 8 young men to 50, you know, so it can be anywhere in there. The adult groups, Our chamber choir, and that's an audition choir, I think we keep that around 24 to 34 members. So that one's our smallest adult choir that is not our artist in residence. That, of course, is our smallest adult choir with 12 voices. But Columbia Chorale, it really, sometimes, even though I don't want it to be like this, but it'll depend on the concert that we're doing. We have some people come kind of in and out. And I say don't want just because we're stronger as a consistent unit, although I understand it's on a volunteer basis. But we have anywhere from 80 to 150 singers in that ensemble.
You said that the kids, it's not a performance thing with them. It's a play thing. It's a learn sort of to love music and to enjoy it sort of for its own sake.
The first ensemble, Poco Voce, from Primo Choir, and that's a third grade through fifth grade. Now, that Primo Choir all the way up through Cantabella, that's Primo Choir is our third through fifth, mixed. Cambiare is for our fifth through eighth grade unchanged voices. And our choristers are middle school and high school unauditioned, so it's not an audition-based group. And then our cantabella is a treble voice that's about seventh grade on up through high school. Now, those are performance-based groups, so it's only the youngest ones that are musical play.
So how many concerts, performances, do the youth choirs tend to do during the average year?
Sure. So our CAM season itself has 12 to 14 performances every season. Each of the varying groups gives anywhere from two major formal concerts to four to five. So chorale in some busier seasons will give five. The rest of them, like chamber choir, does two. My youth choirs, they'll do two formal concerts. My audition chamber choir, Cantabella, they perform much more frequently. They serve as kind of our touring group. So it just varies on the ensemble. Our community gospel choir performs one major concert a year, and that is our unity concert in January.
So coming up very,
very soon, January
right.
26th.
Okay. And as part of, I want to say, as part of a celebration of Martin Luther King that Columbia normally
yes.
has.
Yes. Yeah. It's a free concert, and every year, this is our fourth year doing it, we choose a nonprofit in our community to raise funds for. So it's a free will offering. You come and you give what you can. And even if it's just come and give your spirit and your energy in the audience, then bring that. The past 4 years have been wildly popular, and we've gone to different venues, different church venues, and performed. And it's often been, last year was standing room at First Presbyterian. Now this year it's at the Missouri United Methodist Church again, and that's there on 9th Street across from Shakespeare's Pizza.
Right. But that's a substantial space.
It
so
is,
when you have
but
standing room only.
We have filled it before and we want to fill it again because it's a concert that is great for anyone. So you bring young people and they can be loud and they can cry if they need to, and you take them out. Remember, I have two toddlers. I know how it is bringing your toddlers somewhere. So it's there's some music that is more pensive. Most of the music is exuberant it's just full of spirit.
Well, and part of when you have young kids, it's also teaching them how to be an audience. And
that's true.
If part of learning to be an audience is I'm so afraid that I can't make a sound or that mommy or daddy or aunt and uncle or grandma or grandpa will get mad at me, it kind of defeats the purpose
right.
of saying, just come and be
right.
a little bit at ease and,
yes.
and realize that that's
definitely
that
yeah.
sound is joyful too.
We want to train future concert goers. I think the arts are essential and making sure that anyone is welcome. And that's kind of the point of what CAM is we're making music accessible to our community.
So as choral director, A, you get to herd everybody, which is in itself, okay, a challenge. But I'm assuming that you also have a great deal of say, maybe complete say, over what music is performed and the kind of music that is performed. So how do you go about selecting?
Yeah, great question. Yes, my role as artistic director is that of essentially planning anything that has to do with what we're singing, what the season looks like. And as I mentioned earlier, I tend to start doing that at least 8 months in advance or more. And I'm always thinking about it. It's always going on in my head. For me, it's about creative. I talked about I'm being drawn to music that have social justice themes. So what stories can I tell? What messages can I share? I also think it's really important that we continue to build relationships. Now, I don't mean just within our ensemble, and that is an important element of why people often sing, is this idea of the community, of the social aspect of it, but relationships with other organizations in our community. If I look at our season, I tend to try to partner up with as many different organizations, both musical or non-musical, as I can. So most of our concerts have some sort of relationship with another, often really opposite organization than a choral organization like ours. For instance, this past fall, we performed, we partnered with the Asian Affairs Center and performed an all Japanese concert, brought in a taiko group from St. Louis to do some taiko drumming. And that was a really unique concert, bringing in audiences that may have never gone to one another's functions before. And so right there is building bridges, right? We are, and that really is the point. We have to learn to work with one another to celebrate differences, but then also see, hey, we're not all so different. I think it's really special.
And we all absolutely can sing, although some of us a lot better than others.
That is so right. I say, if you can talk, you can sing. With that being said, I do need people in the audience. So no. So we work with folks. If they have a joy in their heart for singing, we can help them. I mean, that's our job, folks who have gone to school to learn how to teach people to be better singers.
So as you think about next year or mm-hmm. perhaps the year after next, what sorts of plans either are you hatching or that are sort of dreams? I wish we could do this. I wish we could somehow make this a reality.
Okay. So when I started 6 years ago, the organization was just Columbia Chorale Incorporated. And at that time, coming on, there were cuts at the middle level for middle school music, vocal music in our community.
Yes.
And that, to me, was sort of the whole reason why we started Columbia Youth Choirs, because that middle level is so formative in so many ways. I mean, developmentally, it's such an important time in their lives. And then musically, if they're not exposed to that at that point, we've lost them. It kills the high school programs, it kills college programs, and then even adults continuing to sing. So, and again, singing is very important, and I'll talk about that if we have time about why I think it is so essential. So we started Columbia Youth Choirs. Now, I bring this up because every year I'm always looking at where are their holes? How can we supplement maybe something that's existing in our community, like our music programs? So we've got some really fine music programs here in Columbia and even in the surrounding communities. But I taught for 2 years in Macon, Missouri, and I know that while that school supported the arts, not every rural school does, and not every school has the financial support. And so you might have a teacher teaching kindergarten through 12th grade band and choir and general music. And so having a program like Columbia Youth Choirs to help supplement is really important. So we started with CYC only having three choirs, and then every year building out from there. So now we're K through 12. And then the gospel choir started. And then we thought, well, if we have a gospel choir for adults, we should have a gospel choir for kids. And I should say that gospel choir is a very short experience. It's a 4-week. So for someone who's really, really busy, gospel choir is sometimes a great, hey, I'm going to come in, I'm going to sing. It's low low time commitment.
Intense while you do it, but then you get to walk away.
Exactly. Yeah. For those that maybe just have schedules that don't allow them to rehearse weekly for 13, 15 weeks in a row. We started the chamber choir. We kept growing. Prometheus joined us. Now, Prometheus had been independent and then came under the CAM auspices. But I am drawn to areas in our community that just need maybe more. What's the word that I want to use? Oh, shoot. This is where I would use profanity, but don't cut that. How do I say? I'll start over maybe that
maybe
sentence.
More exposure or yeah, more ability
that's
to,
it.
To for others to see what really is
absolutely.
Already there.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. So more exposure, I think that's a great way to put it. I love when we can use music to promote anything positive. And so maybe if it's acquire for individuals that are part of our homeless community? You know, is that an area that we can reach out? Looking at groups of individuals that don't have the same opportunities as someone else. And so going in and making sure that everyone feels important and everybody feels cared about.
Well, and in some sense, you never know what door will open with that.
Definitely.
Happens. So as the last question for the interview, I'm going to let you take us out on what you said. Tell me why singing is important.
Okay. So often the arts are on the chopping block, especially when budgets are tight. And the individuals sometimes feel like the arts are maybe not necessary. And I disagree. I think it transforms lives. I think evidence research suggests that, and we see that the value in all different areas. And so I just kind of wanted to list to make sure that that people understood that what we're doing is not frivolous. It's not a frill that can just be cut. It is essential. You are valued, and the arts are valued in our community. It transforms lives by it stimulates healing and recovery for the ill. That's why we have individuals in music therapy. It helps us make connections around the world, like that concert that we did that brought the Asian Affairs Center partnering with CAM. It helps us celebrate our differences, creates dialogue with others we might not necessarily connect with. It transforms for our young people into engaged thinkers, leaders, team players. It helps build their confidence. It becomes an emotional or social outlet for individuals. We all go through so many highs and lows in life, and this is something that helps maybe helps us connect or work through some of these issues without having to talk about it. Singing about it sometimes makes it easier. And then for you practical thinkers, it does stimulate our economy. concerts, people will pay for the concerts. Maybe they'll go out to dinner beforehand or afterwards. So the arts are important. The arts aren't frivolous. And I want to recognize all those individuals who do support the arts, whether it be coming to concerts, whether it be donating to your favorite arts organization, those businesses that do. And then also the leaders who go down and they're constantly advocating, lobbying for the arts. We thank them, and I just want to make sure they're recognized too.
So, Emily, thank you so much for this great introduction to all that you are doing and all that we have access to in Columbia. This is Lee Wilkins for Thinking Out Loud.
And that is our program for this evening, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. We want to once again thank Emily Edgington Andrews for being our guest, and thanks to Lee Wilkins. I almost said guest host, but she's part of the team for Keeps now. I don't think guest host is appropriate, so we'll just say the other host of Thinking Out Loud and leave it at that. We'll be back with another program next Tuesday evening and with you every Tuesday evening on KBIA. Remember, you can hear past shows in the Thinking Out Loud series at our website. Just go to kbia.org and click on programs for Thinking Out Loud. There's also a Thinking Out Loud Facebook page. Look for KBIA Thinking Out Loud. There's a lot of Thinking Out Louds out there. We're not the only one, so be sure to put the KBIA in there when you search for it on Facebook. And I am on Twitter at KBIA Morning. Again, we're back next Tuesday with another Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Till then, for Lee Wilkins, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.